Welcome to the NXT Podcast, your home for weekly NXT reviews and insight.
The beautiful part of NXT is that when one dream ends, another dream begins.
Find all of your NXT news, recaps, and analysis right here. So with that being said, we only have one question for you.
Are you ready?
We thought so. Let's get the show started right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the NXT Podcast. It's great to be back with you. As always, my name is Zachary Smith. I am your host here on this illustrious award-winning program. I am here every week, same wrestling time, same wrestling channel. Can't get enough of me. You can also find me on Twitter. I am at ZachNXT. That's at ZachNXT. We're always talking about wrestling and other fun stuff over there. Check us out. Now, for this week, we have the rare episode of NXT that I did not enjoy very much. Generally, even the shows that aren't maybe the best, I will find things to enjoy, and just overall, I usually like the shows. This is the rare instance where I can't really say that. It's a show that's setting up a lot of feuds, and there's surprising moments, but I don't think any of it is particularly interesting, I suppose. I imagine as we talk about it, we'll come across a couple of things we liked, but I was definitely bored watching the show this week, and that doesn't usually happen. But we're going to run through it and see how we feel as we go. So Johnny Gargano is out first. He's already in the ring. He's our current North American champion. He's got wrestling tights on and one of his t-shirts, and he's got a wheel in the ring, and the wheel has a bunch of names on it. Thatcher, Timothy Thatcher, Damian Priest. There's a bunch of people on that list, and one of the names, which was clearly just written on a piece of paper and taped to the wheel, is Leon Ruff. Leon Ruff is an enhancement talent from NXT that I think recently was signed. And basically, Leon Ruff is a very skinny guy who's very skilled, who is very good at making people look good, and so that's what he's used for. And Johnny's out here, and apparently this is the Wheel of Challengers. Now, last week, Johnny said that he was going to be facing a very worthy opponent this week for the North American title. He asked the crowd to respect his wheel, and he said, "The first time I held this title, in my first defense, I lost. That's bad luck. But then I won the NXT Championship, and the same thing happened. That's not bad luck. That's a curse. I'm cursed, I tell ya." He says, "Someone will get the opportunity of a lifetime with one spin." And so he very excitedly goes over to the wheel and spins it and stares at the wheel waiting for the results. And we learn very quickly that the wheel is clearly rigged. The wheel is weighted. And so it goes past Leon Ruff and then lands back on Leon Ruff. Very obviously was going to land on Leon Ruff's name. So he calls him out and Leon Ruff comes out. Leon Ruff is really, really excited that he's getting the shot at the North American title today. And it also occurs to me that Leon Ruff is a very skinny man. I haven't seen him in a little bit. I forgot how skinny he is. Johnny is so very excited to see Leon Ruff. Johnny holds the ropes open for Leon Ruff. He's absolutely overjoyed that Leon Ruff is the one that won this quote-unquote contest. Johnny holds the ropes open. He shakes his hand. He poses with Leon Ruff, gives him a thumbs up. Johnny doesn't even take his shirt off as the match starts. He's clearly very not worried about this. They're having their match, and Leon Ruff is getting no offense in whatsoever. Johnny's posing for the camera. Johnny is so cocky at this point that it goes beyond a heel or a bad guy showing off. It's at this point where I started to feel like we were telegraphing what was going to happen here. But it works with somebody like Leon Ruff because, one, he is a very slight individual, but two, Leon Ruff hasn't won any matches except, I think, one against Austin Theory when they were doing the story that Austin Theory couldn't win matches. So it's believable that Johnny could just completely destroy this guy and move on. So we cut over and they're having their match, and it's not even so much a match as it is Johnny just beating the hell out of Leon Ruff. And Johnny goes to the outside, and Damian Priest is now in the audience behind one of the barricades, and he's staring down Johnny. Johnny taunts him. He does the bow and arrow shot to mock him. And then he turns to the camera, and he's laughing at Damian Priest. At that point, Damian Priest has walked around the fence and is staring down Johnny, and it scares Johnny, and Johnny quickly runs back into the ring. Johnny is very good at being a jerk and then being scared when any kind of consequence is about to show itself. So he's doing a very good job. Also, this match is not at all competitive, and it doesn't really have a story at all. And so you almost need Damian Priest, because there's more of a history with Priest and Gargano than there is with Gargano and Ruff. So you almost need Damian Priest out there, because Leon Ruff at no point is going to be a threat to Johnny. Johnny is just much better in the way that he has been presented. So putting Damian Priest out there does a couple things. Helps distract Johnny so that Leon can get the upper hand, and also adds another element to the match that wouldn't otherwise be there. Also helps set up a feud maybe down the road so that they have something to fight about and more of a personal issue than they already do. So they're both in the ring now, and Johnny, it looks like, is setting up for a super kick. And before he does that, he mocks Damian Priest, and he goes to do his super kick, and Leon Ruff basically dips under it and catches Johnny with a crucifix pin and gets the three. So he hits the crucifix pin, he pins Johnny in the middle of the ring, and I think that was the only move he hit, and he wins the North American title. It's at this point that I wrote, this is weird. So Leon Ruff is by the entrance ramp with the title, Johnny is freaking out, the ref went to grab the belt, and Johnny tried to grab the belt out of the ref's hands, because Johnny's fantastic. So Leon Ruff is by the entrance ramp now with Damian Priest, and Damian Priest, I believe the back is Velcro now, which is weird. So Velcro's the belt to Leon Ruff. Leon Ruff goes to raise his hands, and the belt falls down. Do you get it? He's very skinny. And then they walk to the back, and Leon Ruff almost falls because he still has the belt around his legs, because he's a very skinny man. He can't wear it like a belt, you see. I don't know how I feel about this. I would have been interested to see what kind of response this got if it were in front of a crowd. On one hand, I know that Leon Ruff is a very talented guy, and he's very good at making other people look good. He's always an underdog, because you're never expecting Leon Ruff to win a match. And so he's put in this position where Johnny clearly weighted that wheel so that he would get Leon Ruff, saw him as no challenge whatsoever. For the vast majority of the match, Leon Ruff was no challenge whatsoever, but he used his smarts to catch Johnny off guard and win the title. So from that perspective, it's interesting. And I do wonder what kind of connection Leon Ruff would have with the crowd at this point. I mean, we've seen him on TV a good bit now. I don't know that he would have gotten a super reaction from this, other than the reaction that fans will generally have when they're shocked about something they certainly did not see coming. This is also interesting because it continues the narrative with Johnny. Now, the first time he won the North American title, he lost on his first defense. When he won the NXT title, he lost in his first defense. And now, the second time with the North American title, he loses on his first defense. He just won this title from Damian Priest at Halloween Havoc. So this was a very quick turnaround with the title, and is lost again in his first defense. So the next time Johnny becomes either North American or NXT champion, there is going to be more of a question even than there was about whether or not he can defend that title successfully, because thus far he has not been able to. He's like the Sasha Banks of NXT. He's very good at winning titles, and he's very bad at keeping them. I think he's actually worse than Sasha. Sasha at least had a couple, presumably, successful title defenses in there. So, for all those reasons, it's an interesting idea. Now, on the other hand, again, Leon Ruff is very talented, but Leon Ruff is very small, and on top of that, he has been presented as, at best, an enhancement talent, just there to make the other person look good, and at worst, a joke, like he was presented after the match here. And so, you put him in this match, and it seemed like what was going to happen was that Leon Ruff was going to catch him with a move and then take over, and this was going to light a fire under Leon Ruff, and he was finally going to fight back, because for all of his matches, just about, he just kind of takes a beating. And I thought that it was going to be Johnny getting too cocky and Leon Ruff finally getting sick of it and saying, forget this, and firing up on Johnny, eventually losing but fighting a hard-fought battle. But instead, we had him get beat up the whole match, and then after a distraction, gets a pin. And I'm sure that the goal of this story is not to have Leon Ruff be a long-reigning champion or anything, but it does seem weird to start off your championship reign with a match that you were getting beat up in for 99.9% and then hit one move and won. So your North American champion is already kind of a joke, and it was really just to further some story, either with Damian Priest and Johnny, or just the narrative that Johnny cannot successfully defend titles. And so it doesn't start that title reign off on a good foot. I don't know that Leon Ruff would have gotten a great reception just because of the way that they've used him and the way that he won the title. He could have been, you know, built up and being taken more seriously, but a guy who is that skinny and fulfills the role that he fulfills on NXT, you don't expect him to win the title. And when he does, because of the way he's been presented and because of the way this match was presented, I didn't feel like, oh man, Leon won. Holy crap, that's a shock, that's a surprise, I'm so happy. It was more like, huh, so Johnny lost the title again, and I guess Leon Ruff has it, so his first defense, he'll lose it. And I don't know that that's the reaction they wanted when Leon won. They certainly wanted shock, and they wanted it to look like Leon was going to get his butt kicked, and they succeeded in that. But I don't know how I feel, because on one hand, I think this was stupid, and on the other, I think that it tells an interesting story, maybe, with Leon Ruff, and certainly adds a layer of interest to Johnny's story, and he has something to complain about now. But, I mean, I guess we'll see next week where we take it, if they're going to do anything else with this, or if it's just going to be Johnny getting it right back. I'm not sure, but we'll see. Right now, Leon Ruff is just a real skinny dude that happens to be North American champion kind of by accident, and hopefully we get more of a story with it than that, because Leon Ruff is very talented, and I think he could be something for them down the road, but we'll just have to wait and see, I guess. So Leon Ruff is walking to the back, and he's about to be interviewed, and a bunch of people are in the back clapping for him. A bunch of people not wearing masks in a crowd together. That's cool. William Regal, the gentleman that's up there in age, not wearing a mask in a group of people in a company that isn't good at containing COVID. I'm realizing all this as I'm talking because I did not write that down, but it now occurs to me that old William Regal not wearing a mask in a crowd full of people that we've had several COVID outbreaks. That's cool. That's probably not the smartest. But everybody's clapping for him. Damian Priest congratulates him, and he says, however, Johnny's going to come through that curtain, and he's going to be pissed off, so you need to not be here. And for some reason, Damian Priest gives Leon Ruff the keys to his car and tells him to get out of here. So Leon Ruff runs out, and a few seconds later, Johnny comes through the back. I don't know why Damian Priest would give Leon Ruff his car. It seems like you could offer to give him a lift, or you could just tell him to get out of here, and he could just do that. It's weird to give Leon Ruff your car. Also, Leon Ruff, although he is an adult, does not look old enough to drive a car because he's very small. But Leon Ruff runs off, presumably drives off, and then Damian Priest and Johnny get into it a little bit. During the scuffle, Johnny is arguing with William Regal, and he said, "That doesn't count. It was stupid. That was a stupid idea." And Damian Priest yells, "It was your idea." And Johnny's yelling about how that doesn't count, so on and so forth. So we cut from that for right now, and we cut back to the ring where Santos Escobar, that is in fact still his name, is in the ring with his boys from his group, whose name I forgot as I was about to say it, but he's with his boys, and they are already in the ring, and he's going to be defending his cruiserweight title. It is so weird to have a champion get the enhancement talent entrance. The enhancement talent entrance is you will cut to the ring, and there will already be somebody in the ring. A lot of times you won't know that they're there because, let's say, Lars Sullivan comes out. So you'll see Lars Sullivan's whole entrance, and when Lars Sullivan's entrance is done, then they'll announce the enhancement talent, who you didn't necessarily notice before, because the enhancement talent doesn't get an entrance, obviously. It's super duper weird to cut in from a commercial and the person is already there before a match, because that is what you generally do with an enhancement talent. If it's a champion or it's a star, they usually will, even if they're just talking, will get an entrance. So like Drew McIntyre, when he was WWE champion, just about always opened Raw, and they never just had him appear in the ring. He always got an entrance. It makes you feel important and like a superstar. It's announcing your arrival. So it's just always weird to me when a champion is just in the ring. So Jake Atlas is out, and it cuts to earlier today. Atlas is in his car, and he's being interviewed, and he gets out of the car with a pipe, and he attacks one of Escobar's boys that he saw walking by. I forget why this feud started, but Jake Atlas took it to a different level. It's weird, because Jake Atlas went from getting beaten up badly by Ciampa to returning a few weeks later and saying, "Next week I'm gonna kill you," or whatever, which I believe at the time I remarked that it's weird to be so mad at a guy that you're going to challenge him to a match, but not so mad that you won't go try and hit that guy right now. Ciampa was waiting for him to get in the ring, and Jake Atlas just said, "No, I'm super mad, but I'm not mad enough to do anything right now. I'm going to do it next week." So he went from a potential program with Ciampa that I do not for the life of me remember the resolution to. It feels like it just didn't happen. I don't remember if Ciampa got swept up in the Velveteen Dream Kushida stuff. I don't remember what happened. But he went from that to challenging for the Cruiserweight title, which, through no fault of any of the wrestlers, is by far the least important title on NXT. I only cannot say in the company, because the 24/7 title exists, and it's really just an excuse for R-Truth to do quote-unquote comedy on Raw, and R-Truth is actually very funny, but the careful how I say this, character that they have him portray is at worst offensive and at best mildly entertaining. So that's the least important title, and just above that is the Cruiserweight title. And again, that is not the fault of Santos Escobar, or is Isaiah Swerve Scott, or Jake Atlas, or anybody. It's just that NXT does not value that title the same way they do the North American or NXT or women's titles and or tag titles. And that's fair, because it's essentially just a remnant of a division that really doesn't stand out. The Cruiserweights, for example, in WCW, were Cruiserweights in the Land of Giants. So in the main event, you would have Kevin Nash versus Scott Hall, just two big lumbering dudes. Well, one big lumbering dude and a guy who was good to very good in the ring, depending on who you ask. But opening the show, you would have a Rey Mysterio versus Eddie Guerrero. So they were very fast-paced, they had very cool moves and very fun matches, and it was a stark contrast to the main, quote-unquote, main event style. So the main eventers would never let the cruiserweights into the main event, but a lot of people, like myself, watched for the cruiserweights because that's where the really fun matches were. In WWE, they started with a cruiserweight tournament, which was great because it was high octane. But then they had 205 Live, and 205 Live was just going to be after SmackDown, which is like having the opening act go on after the main event. And then nobody really cared, and then it slowly became obvious that the cruiserweights don't work a different style anymore. Most of the people on Raw or SmackDown are smaller, quicker dudes who wrestle a cruiserweight style, so they don't feel special. So because of all this, NXT doesn't put the same amount of importance behind that championship. And honestly, I don't blame them. I don't feel like you need a cruiserweight championship because this match would not have been any different without the cruiserweight title. And the cruiserweight title can, for most people, feel like an albatross around their neck as opposed to something to strive for. Again, not because anybody in that division is bad or it's not important, it's just not treated like it is. So I don't know if they know what they want to do with Jake Atlas, because he's just kind of bouncing around, and I don't know anything about him. I haven't heard him cut but one promo, and so, you know, I know he's very good in the ring, but that's all I know. So they're having their match, and Atlas goes for that somersault on the top rope that leads into a DDT, but then he stops for no discernible reason except so that Escobar can quote-unquote reverse it and hit his finisher, and Escobar does, and he retains his title. This match wasn't very good to me. Few problems. There's no big story or important story to this. It's just that Jake Atlas had an issue with Santos Escobar and his boys and then attacked one of them and then somehow got a title shot. And then, in addition to the fact that there's not really a big story, Jake Atlas isn't a credible threat. Like, he got beat up by Ciampa, and then that went nowhere, and then he didn't do anything for a while, and now he's back. So, like, there's no reason for me to think that if Isaiah Swerve Scott couldn't take the title, which on one hand he should have, on the other, I don't want him anywhere near that cruiserweight title. I want him near the North American or NXT titles. But if Swerve couldn't take that title, there's no reason for me to think that Jake Atlas would, just the way that they've used him. This isn't an important title. We already covered that. And there were just spots that didn't quite go right. Like, Jake Atlas gets thrown off the top rope, and I think he was supposed to hit the announce table, but he completely missed it and had to just kind of hit it with his arm and sell it as if he had hit. Jake Atlas went for a suicide dive to the outside, but it looked like maybe he scraped the rope and it slowed his momentum, or he just didn't get enough speed into the suicide dive. And so he essentially fell mostly short of Santos, and they both just had to sell it. There was a lot of little moments like that where sometimes you just don't have chemistry with a guy or a woman that you're in there with. You don't know if you're going to have that chemistry until you get in the ring, so I've heard from a lot of wrestlers. And you'll hear about magic when two people lock up for the first time and they have instant chemistry. It's not about whether you know moves or whether you're good at calling stuff. Some people just work really well together. And unfortunately, the opposite is also true, where sometimes, even if it's a friend of yours, even if you're both excellent wrestlers, you just don't have a chemistry. And it's either that one or two of these guys had a bad night at the same time, or these two guys don't have chemistry, because I've seen both of these guys have excellent matches. So I know it's not a talent issue, and I know it's not a knowledge issue. I think it's an issue of This was a cold match with not real fans there and no real story. And I just don't think they have chemistry together. And that sucks. You can't really do anything for that, I don't think, except maybe work together more. But, I mean, there's no house shows to work anything out on anymore. So you kind of have to work it out at dark matches or on TV or, I guess, in practice. But it just felt like there was no chemistry here, and it felt sloppy in a lot of places, and just, you know, one thing goes wrong and then five go wrong. So, I don't know. I just didn't particularly enjoy it. It was kind of boring to me, not only because of the story, but because, you know, they kept having miscues. And, I guess Santos Escobar is on to the next person, unless we're going to continue this weird feud. But, I don't see a chemistry here, so I don't know that I'd want to keep putting them in the ring together. So, we'll see. So there's your recap of Candice LeRae last week running over Shotzi Blackheart's tank. Shotzi's being interviewed, and Shotzi said that she's very upset about that. She says that that tank represents freedom and family and her military family, I think she said. And it shows some pictures of some American flags and some military service members. I'm assuming that's people in her family. And while that is very nice, and I, you know, certainly, you know, honor and cherish people in my life that are in the military, I will at this point out that it's a mini tank. And, listen, if I owned a mini tank and you ran over it with a monster truck, I'd certainly be upset and I'd be cross with you. I'd want to have a conversation. But I certainly don't think that I would cry in the middle of the ring, darn near hysterically, and I certainly wouldn't still be so mad the next week that I said that, you know, you basically ran over my friends and family and my military family. It felt like they really wanted to get that military family line in there. That seemed like what we were doing right there. They had a tribute to the troops essentially thing at the beginning of the show, and it felt like they wanted to hammer that home. And, you know, I get it. Shotzi has been using that tank for a long time, and it's clearly important to her, and I would never tell somebody that, you know, something that is important to them is not important. But this feels like when Chris Jericho and Kane started a feud because Chris Jericho spilled coffee on Kane. Just on, I think, a random Raw. Jericho spills the coffee on Kane and they start a feud because of that. It felt a lot like that, where instead of just like attacking Shotzi or hurting her, Candice ran over her mini tank and Shotzi says it represents her like friends and family and military. At the end of the day, it's hard for me to get super invested when it's just a mini tank. I like Candice LeRae. I love Shotzi Blackheart. So I'm not mad that there's going to be a feud here. And I certainly will cross my fingers and hope that, you know, this feud gets more and more personal. But I certainly will not forget that it started because a mini tank was run over by a monster truck. So, I don't know. We'll see what we get from here. So Toni Storm is out next. Toni Storm's awesome. And then after that, Candice LeRae is out. This is a weird setup because you just played the recap of Candice running over the tank and then Shotzi being interviewed, basically saying, I'll see you soon. But now it's Candice LeRae versus Toni Storm. And I'm now so very sure, because I've watched WWE for a lot of years, I'm so very sure that at some point Shotzi Blackheart is going to interfere or be involved at some point in this match now. It's weird to put those two things right next to each other. So they have an alright kind of match. It's clearly just a setup for something. And Candice wins by hitting a roll-up pin on Toni Storm and puts her feet on the ropes to get a dirty win over Toni Storm. Toni Storm already feels like less special. When she first was coming into NXT, it felt like, oh man, here we go. And then she had a match with Shotzi that was interrupted by a tank being run over. And this week she has a match with Candice and she loses. And it wasn't a clean loss, certainly. So, you know, there's that. But, boy, Tony just feels like one of the women now instead of, like, a standout. And I don't mean to say, oh, they buried her or anything like that. That's silly. But, boy, oh, boy, she just doesn't feel as special. Same thing happened to Ember Moon. But I kind of expected that with Ember Moon because that's what happened the last time. We remember Ember Moon very fondly, as we should. But that last feud, if you can call it that, with Asuka really... It established that Asuka was an A-level and everybody else was at best a B-level. And part of the problem with that is that it makes people not feel special. And that's where Tony's at right now. Tony is beyond talented enough to come back from that and be back better than ever. So I'm not worried about it. It's just that was my first thought when she lost. So Toni Storm starts beating up Candace after the loss for cheating, but that dumb Grim Reaper comes in, and now it's clearly a woman, because now the real person is under the hood. Fun fact about wrestling, if you ever see some mystery man or woman in a mask or an outfit that is meant to obscure someone's identity, up until the moment that that person is unmasked, the person under that outfit is not the real person. So, like, this person was somebody else. When Mickey James had that dumb outfit on with Alexa Bliss and whoever it was, that was not her for a lot of the time. When Ric Flair was revealed as the Black Scorpion against Sting, all the weeks leading up to that, it was not Ric Flair under there. This was not Indy Hartwell under the Grim Reaper mask the whole time. It's just a funny little detail, and it's funny to go back and watch when you see a masked person and realize that that was totally not the person that I see in front of me. It's not a bad thing, it's just a funny thing. So, dumb Grim Reaper, who I'm sick of, comes in and helps Candace beat up Toni Storm, and here's Shotzi Blackheart. Shotzi runs in and beats on Candace for a minute and kicks the Reaper until the Reaper helps Candace take over, and the Reaper and Candace beat down Shotzi for a minute, and the Reaper takes off her mask, and obviously it's Indy Hartwell, obviously. Few problems. One, this was played like a surprise. They had her take off her mask, they tried to get a crowd reaction, and they had the announcers say, it's Indy Hartwell! Okay. So it's played like a surprise, and it ain't that. I called this as soon as I saw the Grim Reaper help Candace at Halloween Havoc. And that is not to say that I am some genius or I am particularly smart for cracking the code and figuring it out. It's just that based on the story that they told, that was the only person it could be. There was nobody else on the women's roster that was going to be interested in helping Candace LeRae. And we have seen Indy Hartwell help Candace before, so there was not going to be anybody else that was under that hood. And it's not a surprise if we knew who it was, and it's not a big deal that the person was wearing a mask if the person takes off that mask and it's exactly who you thought it was. So, problem two, we have already seen Indy Hartwell helping Candace, so it's not shocking that she was now the one helping Candace. So, in the context of the story, why did Indy Hartwell wear a mask? Indy Hartwell wasn't like a babyface or a good guy that was secretly helping Candace. That's the way this was played, was that, like, Indy Hartwell was a good guy in public appearances or on the show, but then was helping Candace behind the scenes and then decided to finally unveil herself. It was very much played like, oh my god, Indy Hartwell's gone to the dark side. But like not that many weeks ago, she handed Candace LeRae a pair of brass knuckles to help her win a match. So like, why are we playing it like this? And why has she been wearing the mask? I can almost understand wearing it for the person who interfered in Johnny's match and Indy Hartwell because it was Halloween Havoc, I guess. But why'd you keep wearing the mask? Especially because we knew it was you. So that, okay, so masked person two is Indy Hartwell. We still don't know who Johnny's masked person is. I could very well be wrong, but the only person in storyline that it makes sense for this to be is Austin Theory. So I don't know if we're going to play it again like we're shocked, but I don't know, maybe this will do some good for Indy Hartwell. I mean, this part sure was underwhelming, but I mean, hopefully she gets to learn from Candace. Candace is a great teacher, and she's excellent. So I don't know, maybe she'll get something out of it. We go from that to Breezango in the back, cutting a short promo about becoming the NXT tag champions. They won't. I saved you a bunch of time. They talked for a while, said they were going to be NXT champs, and boy, they sure aren't. So Johnny is at Regal's office door, takes a deep breath, knocks on the door. He says, all right, I took your advice. I took a minute. I calmed down. But he says the match with Leon Ruff should be thrown out. Regal says, but it was your idea. Johnny admits that he rigged the wheel. He said, okay. He said, it was a goof, okay? But I'm still North American champion. Everybody knows that. Again, I love when somebody says something that is not true, but says, everybody knows that, or everyone agrees. It is one of my favorite things. Regal says, the decision stands, and closes the door in Johnny's face, and Leon Ruff is the new North American champion. So we're going to continue this story. Next week, Leon Ruff's going to get the hell beat out of him, I think. So I hope Leon's ready for that. I don't know if they would put the title on Leon and then take it from him the next week. I'm not sure what the point of that would be. I don't know what we're going to do with this story yet. I mean, Leon Ruff is not going to be like a long-term champion. That's no reflection on him, but it just kind of came out of nowhere, and the story's not really about Leon Ruff. Leon Ruff is a vehicle for the Johnny Gargano story, or this part of his story. So I presume next week, I don't know, maybe we get a Leon Ruff promo that's interrupted by Johnny. That seems like WWE-style booking, maybe. So Ciampa's in the back, and he's cutting a promo. And he says he's been in this business a long time, and he remembers meeting guys like Harley Race and Killer Kowalski. So those were tough men. He says, nowadays, and this is where I started, my stomach turned. He said, nowadays, a little life tip. If anybody ever says, but nowadays, they're about to tell you a whole bunch of stuff that they don't like about you or a particular generation. If you can get away from the person, in a timely manner, do it, because the speech is going to sound exactly like this. So nowadays, everyone these days is tough. Everyone in the locker room. And if you don't believe me, just ask them. They'll be more than happy to talk about how tough they are. He says there's words with nothing to have to back them up. He says there's actions without consequences. He said, I guess I'm the last of a dying breed. Little life tip. If anyone ever tells you that they are the last of a dying breed, you also need to get out, because they're either like a douche or they are mad that this generation isn't exactly like their generation and therefore it's worse. Or sometimes they'll be racist. You got to look out for that when somebody says they're the last of a dying breed. It's whichever one it is, it's not good. He said, this culture of 2020 in the locker room is going to change. And Ciampa is that change. Ciampa gets up all quick like he's mad and like kicks the chair as he gets up for no reason. This sounded exactly like an old dude complaining and doing a back-in-my-day speech because this generation didn't do things exactly the way I did, and they have technology I didn't have, and therefore this generation is lazy and doesn't work hard and doesn't have any problems. I had problems. Why don't they have problems? Chances are they have problems, too. They just don't share them, and they don't yell at other generations who can't control when they were born or the technology they have access to.
But because they have more resources, that my generation had to fight for everything we had.
Cool, man. Cool. So, I mean, he does this dumb speech complaining essentially about millennials in the locker room, and it didn't lead anywhere. It made me not want to listen to him. It wasn't even heat. I didn't hate him. I just was like, oh, shut the word I can't say up. What are we doing? Like, is this a new gimmick we're doing? Like a back in my day Ciampa? Because I'd love to stop it before it starts. It didn't lead anywhere, so I don't know why we did it. It wasn't even aimed at anybody in particular. Just whoever. So I can assume that Ciampa wants to work with young guys and put them over and help teach them and stuff. But boy, oh boy, is it dumb and not fun to start it off as making him a back-in-my-day guy. Whatever. There's a video package for Rhea Ripley and Io. Shows Rhea losing the NXT Women's title to Charlotte Flair at WrestleMania, which, to recap, was a terrible idea. And 2 months later, it shows Io winning the NXT Women's title. Boy, oh boy, that Charlotte Flair reign seemed a lot longer than 2 months. I was very surprised that it said 2 months, because it felt like forever. And Io says that it took Rhea until now, essentially, to get over losing that title. She says she doesn't look back. She just plows forward. And apparently, next week, the NXT Women's title will be defended. Io's defending against Rhea Ripley. Okay, that's a hell of a match to give out just on TV, but I dig it, and it was a great video package. Both these ladies are badasses, and I'm excited to see that match. This is the match that we should have gotten for the women's title the first time. Just didn't need Charlotte Flair there. She wasn't even the one that took the pin. Rhea did, so I don't understand why she needed to be involved. So I'm excited to get to see this match. I've said that I think Rhea Ripley is the person that's going to take the title from Io. We're at the point where if you take the title off of Io, I'm not going to cry that it was too soon. But if you keep it on her, I'll completely understand, because she is doing awesome. And her reign almost feels timeless. Like, I can't pin down exactly how long she's been champion, but I know she's been great the whole time. And last, we have Pat McAfee's group coming out. Him, Pete Dunne, Oney Lorcan, and Danny Burch. I'm going to be honest with you here. I skipped a lot of this. Here's the thing. Pat McAfee is excellent on the microphone. Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch are hilarious and very good as backups. And Pete Dunne is very intimidating and very cool and very ripped. But I'm noticing a trend starting maybe a week or two ago where they like Pat McAfee, the way he talks, so much that they tend to give this group a lot of time. And it's kind of been a one-note group thus far. The F, Undisputed Era, fake praise on them. We killed them. Now we're the best. And I can only hear you tell me that so many times before, like, I don't necessarily want to listen to you tell me about it again. So, like, again, this group is fantastic, but I don't want to watch, like, 10 minutes of them talking. So I didn't. So we have Lorcan and Burch against Breezango, and what do you know? Burch and Lorcan win, and then there's a brawl, and the McAfee group comes out on top, and they all have big grins on their faces as they pose strong. So presumably at some point we're going to get Undisputed Era coming back to challenge McAfee's group here. I don't know if they have an official name yet, but that should be fun. There's a lot of great wrestlers in that group, and there's a few great talkers as well. So I'll be excited to see a war of words with McAfee and Adam Cole, presumably. And I'll be excited to see all these dudes match up, because there's no weak link in wrestlers in these groups. Maybe Pat McAfee, just because he's very green and very new at wrestling, but there's no weak links in terms of the wrestlers in either of those groups, so I'm excited. But that was the end of the show, which means it's just about the end of this show. Again, I didn't love this episode. I just felt like the one surprise we got left me feeling 50-50, and there was just a lot of nothing on this show. The Ciampa stuff left a bad taste in my mouth. Candice and Shotzi is a super weird start. Santos Escobar on the Cruiserweight title, I don't know. It just wasn't for me. But we have an NXT Women's title match next week, and we should have a better show then. So whatever you thought of NXT, let me know. Again, at ZachNXT, at ZachNXT, I want to hear what you thought about the show this week. Am I right? Am I crazy? Do I need to shut up because this episode was great? You could let me know over there. But next week, same day, I'll be watching NXT, and I will report back how it went. In the meantime, that means my time is up. I have been Zachary Smith. You have been fantastic, as always. Thank you very much for listening.